This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at rightscast.net. Well, here it is. After 4 years and nearly 150 episodes across something like half a dozen unique programs, we've reached the very final episode of RightsCast Network Programming. Hey there, I'm International Book Awards finalist and RightsCast Network founder, R.R. Campbell. And welcome to episode 100 of your listener-supported R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. For this episode, I'm joined by author Dan Skiro, who, yes, joined me back in episode 1 for the inaugural episode of RightsCast Network Programming. For those of you who don't remember Dan, Dan Skiro is a copywriter who wields his words to sell axes, exercise equipment, and everything in between. He earned a BA from the University of Wisconsin-Madison with a double major in English and philosophy. Dan's debut science fiction novel, Rogue Destiny, is available through all the internet's finest booksellers, along with the first three books in his Alpha Omega series, This Bloody Game, The Weapons of War, and Trials of Ascension. All right. Let's do it one last time. Here's my interview of author Dan Skiro. Stay tuned afterward for one final message of gratitude from yours truly, and thanks, as always, for listening. Thank you so much, Dan Skiro, for joining me for the very final episode of the R.R. Campbell RightsCast here on the RightsCast Network.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. It's really special to be here for the end of this thing, you know, and I gotta say, just like I would in a writing group when somebody finishes a book, I got to say congratulations.
Thanks.
Well done by you, man. You know, this is really something that you've built here. I know how much work you've put into it. And I really think it'll be a resource for writers, you know, long after we hit, you know, end record on this session here.
So, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. And it's interesting, you know, hearing you say congratulations and hearing you say it in that tone of voice did make me recall. Yeah. Every time in the critique group, you and I are, of course, part of that is the first thing you say on that final critique when we see those final chapters. And it's just that's refreshing to hear. So well, thank you for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I mean, it is a congratulations, you know, because just like when you write a book, you're putting yourself out there. You know, you're putting your thoughts out there. You're putting your personality out there. Not everybody's going to love it, you know, but it takes, I think, tremendous nerve to put yourself out there, whether writing a book or doing a podcast or whatever. So it deserves it. It deserves it for sure.
And I think that that's a theme that's come up a few times over the course of the last 4 years here in various interviews is taking opportunities to celebrate. You know, it's about not just looking at the body of work that we have before us and just always looking to the next thing. I mean, having an opportunity to stop, pause, and say, hey, look, that's something. It's a chapter that is closed or that we're moving from one chapter to the next in our own creative life or in our personal life or whatever it is. And I think if we lose sight of that, I mean, when do we give ourselves that pat on the back? You know, how can we feel good about it?
Absolutely. You know, and, you know, not everybody has the nerve to put themselves out there and to give it a shot. You know, there's a lot of people who want to be writers or artists or musicians or whatever, but, you know, don't have the nerve to give it a shot, to get out there and try to write something. So yeah, you know, you got to celebrate that.
Definitely. Absolutely. And in the last 4 years, Dan, you know, you and I have, of course, chatted off air and including once on air. We did the live episode over on the RightsCast Instagram. And hey, you've had quite a bit to celebrate over the course of the last 4 years here in the realm of writing. You've been releasing your Alpha Omega series. Why don't you give listeners a little lead into what that's all about and where you're kind of at in the series in terms of books and what's out there now?
Sure. Well, you know, I got to say, before we start that, I think it's fortuitous for me that I get to be on the first episode of the podcast and the last episode, because that marries up very nicely with Alpha Omega. I get to be
Look
the beginning
that.
And the end.
It's exactly that. And also it makes me think about, I know you and I both really appreciate the work of David Mitchell, who is always really great about having a nod to the same theme or motif or just, you know, an image both at the start and at the end of his novels. So I'd be lying if I didn't say it wasn't inspired a bit by that.
There we go. This is promotional synergy. I love it.
It is. So, it all the stars have aligned for us.
That's great. Okay, so the Alpha Omega series, you know, from one perspective, from a certain point of view, as Obi-Wan would say, you know, it's the story of a, I think, probably damaged, slightly traumatized young man who has kind of rejected his family's wealth and is trying to build something of his own in a heroic way in a very diverse kind of galactic setting, right? You know, that's maybe a little too highfalutin, though. I prefer James Bond in space.
There it is.
So those are the two kind of angles you could probably come at it from. As far as the books, I've released three now. I'm working through my fourth one with my writing group right now. And I've got a bunch in the quiver still here to work on and to get through the writing group and to get out there. So right now, the Alpha Omega series has three books, This Bloody Game, The Weapons of War, and The Trials of Ascension.
And was there also a novella in there too, a novella somewhere?
Yes, I've got a Alpha Omega Blood and Sand, which is like a prequel novella that you can download for free. So go to my website, danskiro.com. You can get it for free there. And if you like the taste that you get, maybe you go on and you get some of the books too.
Look at that. You got an opportunity to have that nice lead in there, lead into the series. And I'll say, you know, as someone who had an opportunity to, I believe I was in the writing group for all of This Bloody Game and for a significant chunk of, if not all of, the second book. And now I have rejoined the critique group here and reading book four. Folks, it really is. It's a very fun series. If you're interested even tangentially in that sort of space opera or, you know, James Bond in space, I think really is a very good pitch for it. It's succinct and it really encapsulates everything that's in that series well. It's fun stuff to read. It's good. It gives you something to turn from one page to the next, you know, every chapter, every scene kind of thing. And I think a part of that, Dan, kind of ties into what we talked about way back in episode one, which we did a focus on writing action scenes. And I don't want to recap, right, you know, that whole conversation, because of course we do have about an hour on that way back in episode one. But I am curious to know, over the course of the last 4 years, have you learned anything new or changed your approach to or gained any additional insight into writing action scenes as you've worked on this series and on other material?
Oh, wow. You know, that's a really great question. Well, let's just say, I mean, I hope I've learned something in the last 4 years. I hope I'm not just stagnating and doing the same thing over and over again. You know, I think probably one thing that's been helpful is refining the processes through which I work, right? You know, I'm a big outline guy, and I really outline in a bunch of stages, right? So there's the first kind of outline for the book, where I just try to hit the events as simply as possible, right? And then there's kind of chapter outlines as I get into it. And, you know, I think at some points in my writing, I would have something in the outline of the fight happens here, then we go on to do this, then we go on to do that, then we go on to this. And, you know, I think I've gone deeper in that regard in saying, okay, so what is so important about this action scene? What makes it unique? What can I do differently? Part of that probably is, you know, out of necessity, right? Because I've written a lot of action scenes with Orion and his team at this point. And you've got to push your creativity to do something new in those action scenes. I was working on something for actually what will be book 7 in the series just last night. And I said, well, to get out of this tight spot in this way is too much like what happens in book 4 or book 5, you know? And, you know, maybe I'd be the only one who would notice, but I would notice. So I want to do something unique and I want to do something exciting and unexpected too.
How is it that you navigate the how of that? Because I think that's something that a lot of writers I know from another group that I'm part of, we have twice a month we meet. One time that month is actual like critique time. And the other time that we meet that month is we just get together. We share something that we're feeling good about with our writing or otherwise. We share a challenge we're facing in our writing. And then we share our goal for next time. And one of the challenges that some folks have mentioned recently, and it's one that I know I face, and it sounds like it's very similar insofar as action scene construction is concerned, is once we've got a body of work that we've written, whether we're, you know, zooming in real close and thinking about it in terms of action scenes, or we're just thinking about it in terms of theme, Mm-hmm. We start to notice, so we're going back maybe to the same well, or this is too similar to that. And we can, you know, really get in our own head. And I guess the question is, after we identify that, and after you have identified maybe, hey, this is a little too similar to something else I've written, what's your approach for finding the how? You know, how do you set apart that new scene from one that you have already written? How do you frame that up?
Well, you know, in some cases, I think the characters will kind of tell you what to do. When you've written a lot of scenes with a particular group of characters, you say to yourself, oh, Ryan's got to do this here. That's just so him. Or Kanger's got to do that here. If I'm really, really stuck, you break away from the story, get a fresh document open, right? And you start coming up with ideas. And don't throw anything out, you know? Just put out some crazy ideas, put out some bad ideas. Sooner or later, though, I feel like I get to one where I'm like, oh, man, that feels like a strong contender. And before I know it, I'm adding some details to it. And then I'm looking at the other ideas and I'm saying, it's not those. And you're already kind of going down that road of what it needs to be, whether it's a conversation or an action scene or a new alien planet that you're trying to bring to life and trying to do something special and different with. So just kind of giving yourself permission to suck is important, I think. and then usually you come to something that is worthwhile.
The holiday season is in full effect. If you're unsure how to answer the question of what you're looking for this year, well, Kill Your Darlings Candle Company is here to help. Their candles for the wordsmiths of the world are the perfect gift to give or receive this holiday season. With candles like Kill Your Darlings, Writer's Block, Diverged in a Wood, and Dragon Tamer, they have extraordinary soy wax candles for writers and readers of all backgrounds. Not only that, but Kill Your Darlings Candle Company now has gift cards. Yes, never fear making the wrong candle choice for a friend, family member, or critique partner again. Or, better yet, don't worry about those same folks making the wrong gift choice for you. Simply tell them you'd like a Kill Your Darlings gift card and pick those candles out for yourself on the far side of the holiday season. To learn more and shop from their sustainably minded selection of candles and more now, visit kydcandleco.com. That's kydcandleco.com. Kill Your Darlings Candle Company. Candles for the wordsmiths of the world. And I think there's something to be gleaned from that also in an earlier comment you made, which is that of refining your process, right? It's both refining and then understanding your process. So if you ever find yourself in a position like Dan has found himself in here, finds himself at times, giving yourself permission to break away from the actual body of work by writing in the manuscript directly and getting that fresh document open, that seems like that has to be a very refreshing way to accomplish what it is that you want to accomplish, because it really lowers it feels like maybe it's lowering the stakes. Does that feel kind of like?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and I think it also helps maybe to work in a different format, if that makes sense, like to get away from your computer. You know, I mean, I used to do things with pen and paper. Now I'd get my iPad out and my, you know, digital pencil, and I'd write some notes there, you know? So, I mean, it kind of gets a different part of your brain working, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I think about writers who, for example, I have a friend who actually, she writes her manuscripts by hand before she goes back and types them up. Yeah. It's really incredible stuff. She's also an excellent writer, and it's really incredible to think about. You know, my brain immediately went to, God, you could really be out there just like grinding away. If you just typed right away, you'd have all these incredible books. And I'm like, well, no, that's not her process. And there is something too, for some folks, like having the opportunity to sit there, write that out by hand, be there at a different pace and a pace that suits them and their creative process. So I think in the same way, you know, we can apply that on the micro level, like you say, and it's not just, oh, maybe we just open a new document, but if you have the opportunity to write it by hand, whether it's on paper or on the screen of your iPad, I can see how that also just really reframes fundamentally your approach to, I guess, the page, and lets you operate in a new, more refreshed space, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, I wouldn't want to portray myself as too analog or anything like that. Like, I love being able to copy and paste, to move stuff around, to easily look something up online. I mean, I can't imagine writers from, you know, I mean, Frank Herbert's day or something like that, how much you'd have to be in the library to figure stuff out. Oh my gosh. Thank God for the internet.
Yeah, I know, right? I think about that a lot too, just even in terms of how it shapes your process, just the ability to sit down in the morning and not, you know, need first and foremost the library to be open or just to even have the opportunity to work in a digital space and say, you know, I really think that this paragraph could work if I shaped it a little differently. And also if it were about four chapters earlier, well, we can just, you know, control C, control V, and then reshape it as we need to versus having
exactly.
to retype entire pages on a typewriter or whatever the case might be. So, I mean, I guess to that extent, we're shaped by our technology and then we go back and other more tech-minded people shape that technology to better suit the process, I guess. So I don't know. It's refining process. It's kind of seems like it's going to be a recurring theme for us here.
Although I got to say, you know, I sometimes do worry about my Google history with regards to what I write, you know, because I'll be sitting there, I'll be like, well, how do you make dynamite exactly? Before you know it, you're Googling nitroglycerin and oh my God, you know, it's like, am I getting flagged for this? I swear I'm just a science fiction writer.
this is more innocuous, but it's what I'm on recently and I'm doing it for different reasons is I have had to pull up, you know, incognito windows to do research on a couple of different things. One is, healing crystals and like chakra and things like that. And the other one is on pregnancy, and both pertain to a novel I'm writing right now, particularly to a character that, you know, is very much in focus as I revise. And the reason that I'm searching for that stuff in incognito isn't because I'm worried about the government swooping in. It's because I don't want to get served ads for that stuff as I go around the internet, right? So it's like, we're not trying to outsmart, you know, the man. We're trying to outsmart, you know, the advertising man. And Dan, I know you're someone who's a copywriter, so maybe you feel slighted by that, but I'm trying to stay one step ahead.
I understand. And, you know, as a copywriter, you really want to reach out to the people who want to hear from you.
Right. Right.
You know, that's important. So, you know, if the ads that I'm writing or the promo videos that I'm writing are not reaching the right people, it doesn't do a lot for the business. So
that's true. And that's exactly it. You know, I don't know, maybe I'm saving folks who would be advertising energy crystals and parenting tips. I'm saving them a couple dollars. So you're welcome. Your ads aren't going to be reaching me on Facebook and elsewhere, but.
Well, not to mention if your wife sees it, you know, she might buy you some crystals for Christmas or something like that.
You know, I thought the same thing, particularly in the context of some other research I was doing for this, which had to do with, divorce lawyers and things like that. And I was like, wouldn't that be terrible? Because I mean, like Lacey and I do a lot of work together, of course, for the candle company. So it's not unusual for us to be like looking at our laptop at the same time. Maybe we're looking some stuff up and I don't want my search history to make her feel like, okay, so Ryan is looking up things about pregnancy, healing crystals, and divorce lawyers. This is very alarming. So, you know, we have to stay one step ahead of everybody here.
Sounds like you're about to run off to some kind of a cult in Arizona or something like that.
Hey, you know, I don't mind Arizona. I happen to enjoy it a lot, but I'm not interested in cults. That's just kind of my MO. So, you know, we're all just doing what we can. Yeah, definitely. Well, Dan, another thing that I wanted to talk to you about here as it pertains to what you've been up to since we talked back in episode one is actually about self-publication in particular, because I know that Alpha Omega, you know, the books in this series, they're not your first foray into self-publishing. You, of course, have Rogue Destiny. I believe that was your first self-published title. Yeah, absolutely. And I just kind of want to get a feel for how navigating that space has been for you. Is that something that you're really enjoying? What's kind of worked for you in that space? What have been some of your challenges? Let's talk it all out here.
Sure. You know, it's been effective for me, especially when I can put money behind advertising, right? Mm-hmm. So like Facebook ads, different online ad services that'll serve them up, again, hopefully to the people who want to hear from me. That's been successful. You know, at one point, my book was Rogue Destiny was climbing into like the top 20 of Amazon's space opera category, right?
Wow, yeah, that's a robust category.
You know, and it was short lived because after that it was like, okay, I can't keep spending on ads quite like that.
Yeah.
So that is one of the big things. Another one of the big things, that's a challenge for me in self-publication is making time to promote it. Mm. I've got a full-time job and I've got, two girls who are 6 and 3. And so you really got to pick and choose how you use your time very carefully, I think. So if, you know, I won the lottery tomorrow, I would definitely have a lot more time to be online, to be pushing this, to be going to different events and everything like that. My life is very busy right now, unfortunately. And, you know, also my career is not something that I just do to put the roof over our heads. You know, I really do like writing for advertising and writing for marketing. You know, I think there's a lot of fun to be had in that game and a lot of satisfaction to be had in that game as well. So balance is difficult right now in my life. I kind of feel like any time that I sit down to do a crossword puzzle, I'm like, what should I actually be doing right now? What should I, you know, what do I need to go do? And that, you know, in a strange way, I feel like that time shortage has been kind of compounded by the pandemic.
Yeah.
Because now, obviously, you know, I've been working from home for, boy, what is it, like 7 or 8 months now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I'm not, you know, writing for my job, when I'm not writing for my novels, I do really feel like I need to get my butt downstairs and entertain those little girls, or, you know, help put one down for a nap, or get some chicken nuggets ready, or, you know, whereas in the past, you know, we had more help from the grandmothers and the grandfathers in that regard.
It's always a struggle when you got kids. Not that I can speak from personal experience, but I can say, you know, I have interviewed obviously quite a few folks over the course of the years here for the RightsCast Network, and we did an entire episode on that. That was actually episode 83 with Sarah J. Carlson, writing as a parent professional. And what stands out both from that conversation, because, you know, we had that interview, I believe we had that discussion in maybe late May of this year. So we were well into the quarantines, but it was still, you know, relatively new that there wasn't a lot of those quasi retrospective and lessons learned and people settling into these new routines. But that's something that I'm hearing consistently, you know, whether you're a parent or not, just the times in which we are living are, they can be very prohibitive toward getting one's work done. So, I mean, I think maybe what the lesson to be taken from all of that is just like, if you do anything, I mean, if you do anything, be proud. And if you need time for a crossword puzzle, do that crossword puzzle. You know, there's no harm in that. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and also I really am taking the long view with this series. You know, I just got book 3 out there. You know, hopefully book 4 will be out within the next year. But I've got 5 written. I've got 6 written. I'm working on the end of 7 right now. And I could see the shape of 8 and 9. And I don't know if that's the end of it quite or if there's more. But, you know, I would really, you know, like to continue to put these things out. And then as kind of the constraints of life loosen up a little bit, I'll have more time and more funds to promote the whole series. It'll always be there, you know. Hopefully, being that it's science fiction as it is, there won't be anything too dated in it.
Right.
Because I tried to stay away from kind of anything that would look like too much like modern technology, to give it its own kind of unique flavor and world. But it is really a long game, you know, and also whatever happens, I've got to share this, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've got this story in your head and at some point you just can't unsee what you see.
Mm-hmm.
So I might as well put it out there.
Well, and that's something that I kind of wanted to ask you about, because, you know, you mentioned you can't unsee what you've seen, you've written it, you want to get it out there into the world. And I was listening just this last week to a podcast, I believe this was on the Game of Books podcast, which I, you know, gave a listen to an episode of theirs after they happened to reach out to me by email. It was an interview with Elena Taylor, who was talking about when writing a series, you know, it is only natural that as a series progresses, you see readers drop off, and it's not necessarily part sure. of the writing. It doesn't have to do with whether or not you've written a good story. It's just sort of the inevitability of readership. You know, sure. folks aren't going to pick up. They're not going to pick up book 4 as book 1, probably, hopefully. You wouldn't want to just, you know, be lost or anything. But Dan, how are you finding the read-through rate kind of, are you finding you're getting a good read-through rate, or is that not something you even consider because you're so focused on just getting the content out there because it's something you've wrote and you want to share?
No, it is a good read-through rate. It would be wonderful if the sales in general were higher, sure.
Right, of course, always.
But it does seem that, you know, from, you know, the Amazon analytics that I get, that people who pick up the first book tend to pick up the second and the third, you know, and now, you know, I mean, obviously it's in a way promotional, but it's also part of the story I wanted to tell. Now that there's the novella prequel there, they can get that, and then they can get, you know, the next three books of the series as a package right now. So, you know, so far so good with that. The idea would be to just get more people started on it is right. What would really be central to more success.
Yeah, shoring all of that up is always a challenge, I think. But like you say, you need to be putting yourself in a position to actually have the time and the funds available to really push for that. And also just, you know, continuing to believe in yourself and in your work and in the series that you've written, which clearly is something that you do and have done. I mean, it sounds like you're working on book 7. I know that we're seeing book 4 in the critique group that we're on. And I know that that's, for me anyway, it's a challenge to know that you're writing faster than perhaps critique partners or beta readers can keep up kind of thing. So how do you kind of keep your chin up knowing that there is often a couple of years delay in the time that it takes to get a book through a group plus, you know, getting it to publication after you've already written the thing?
Oh, man, that's a great question. You know, a big part of that to me is that there's joy in writing it. You know, you shouldn't be doing this if you don't enjoy writing it. I mean, you know, at least have the decency to enjoy transcribing imagination time, right?
Right.
It shouldn't be horrible. It shouldn't be something that you hate to do. And for me, you know, as I've talked about, my life feels very busy right now. When I get an hour to work on my book, that it really recharges me. It really makes me just feel a lot more better and optimistic. So, I mean, the short answer is just to keep writing.
Yeah, just to keep writing and, you know, make sure that you're writing in the space that you want to write in. Because I know that for me, you know, Dan, I've got a couple of books out in a science fiction series, and I, you know, did a speed run of writing the second book and also writing, you know, a version of a third book. And by the time I got to finishing that third book and even having it turned into the publisher with a publication date slated and all that jazz, I suddenly found myself going, I just don't know. Like, I just wasn't really feeling it. And, you know, I made the choice to go to my publisher and say, like, hey, can we pull this? And we did, because I wasn't sure that I liked the book as it was presented to them. I had other ideas for it. And since having done so, I mean, that was, February of 2020. And since then, you know what? My attention's been elsewhere. The books that I want to write are different books than the ones in that series. And I got to say, you know, being off deadline and giving myself permission and the space to explore and to write, you know, manuscripts like Scambait, to write To Have Been Rich is the one that I'm working on right now. And then I've got this other one called There Is No Mountain. That's been great. Yeah, I have loved it. Whereas before, you know, when I was under the gun with the deadlines looming and feeling like I owed something to a readership, that kind of thing, I really had to fundamentally reframe that. And so it's interesting to think about, you know, as a writer, just embracing the writing that calls to you rather than maybe forcing it is a lesson that I'm sure some listeners can maybe take something from. I don't know. Does that resonate with you at all, Ben?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And don't keep investing in something that you don't love is just the simplest way to put it. You know, it's funny, before I started writing the Alpha Omega series, I just finished Rogue Destiny. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, some other books that I had tinkered with, but ultimately I looked at them and I said, these aren't good enough. I don't like these enough. So those are, you know, I locked those in the basement, keep them down there in the dark. But I just finished Rogue Destiny and I had this idea for this post-apocalyptic thing that I wanted to write.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I got into it and, you know, I had a map of the United States on my wall that I had drawn all over to reshape the landscape, you know. I had all these characters and these factions and this thing that was going to, you know, drive the whole plot and where they were trying to get to and what they were trying to accomplish. And I probably wrote like 400 or 500 pages in that.
Jeez.
And, you know, part of it was that the story I felt like had sprawled kind of out of my control. Like, I was like, is this even one book? You know, it's so long. And there's, you know, so far to go still. And another aspect of it was that, you know, living in the post-apocalyptic world like that, I didn't think that there was just enough places for the characters to have fun, to enjoy life a little bit, you know? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I want these things to be a good hang. But when you're in the post-apocalypse, things are pretty dire, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's not a lot of, you know, great taverns down on the corner where the characters can take a little breather or meet someone new or something like that. So I was probably 400 or 500 pages into that thing. And it was right around the time when my first daughter was born, 6 years ago. And after we came back from the hospital with her, you know, there was obviously, you know, there's a huge adjustment period when you bring your first kid home from the hospital. Your whole life is really different. And you got to kind of rethink, okay, when do I write? When do I get the chance? You know, what are my opportunities here? And I just sat back down and looked at that story and I was like, I'm not feeling it. I'm not having fun here. So from there, I started the Alpha Omega series because those ideas had been kind of bouncing around my head for a while. You know, that, man, I'd like to tell a story where, you know, there's brands and there's businesses and there's cities and there's countries and there's worlds and there's factions in the galaxy, you know. So really, that was kind of the case with that post-apocalyptic story. You know, it's still on my hard drive here, but I don't know if I'll ever revisit it just because I want this kind of stuff to be a good hang. You know, what are we doing if it's not fun?
This episode is brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing. Dandelion Web Marketing helps writers build a thriving author platform through strategic web marketing. You can go to dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers to explore services designed specifically for writers and authors. Because, well, getting your writer's platform set up can become overwhelming. And that's exactly why Dandelion created their Author Quick Start packages. These streamlined websites were created to help you get your website up and running quickly and affordably. They're designed with writers in mind and include the pages, features, and add-ons writers are most likely to need. To get started on your website or to set up a free 30-minute consultation and ask any digital marketing questions you have with no obligation, go to dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. Again, that's dandelionwebmarketing.com/writers. Well, and what I think is really interesting is as you describe that post-apocalyptic, you know, narrative and the way that you kind of approached that and what the revelatory moments were for you in shifting your attention away from that and getting to the Alpha Omega series, I think actually about the Alpha Omega series now and in my brain, what's the word that's standing out to me? What are the images I'm seeing? And it's just this feeling of life. Because I think that one of the things that's fascinating about the worlds that you've created and the characters that are on stage is that because the characters take, you know, as I think should be the case in any good fiction, but as the characters take such a strong role and as the worlds you've created are just so full of life and a diversity of life and all the things that you mentioned, you know, different brands and corporations, it just feels very full. It's really interesting to me, perhaps, that this sort of shift toward life happened to coincide with the birth of your daughter, actually, and sort of like that turning away from the post-apocalyptic thing. And I don't know, maybe that's venturing down like personal territory here, and I'm not here to play psychologist, but it's just really standing out to me as I try to sync all these images up in my own mind.
Well, you know, it's interesting you put it that way. You know, I think that, you know, having your first kid, it really reframes a lot of things in your life, you know, and when you look, you know, you look into their eyes, I know that sounds corny, but you look into their eyes and you say, okay, this is what's important. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what's important. My writing, you know, whether it's my novels or my, you know, copywriting, it's not that important. And in a weird way saying, you know what, it's not that important. It really like lifts this weight off you and the writing becomes better in my opinion. I stopped, you know, I mean, I don't know, it improved my copywriting work, I think immensely, where I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to let it fly. I don't care. And the same thing with writing the novels. It was just like, I can do whatever I want here because, you know, this is just for fun. You know, it's not as serious as I thought it was. And it made me better at my job and at my writing.
Well, and what I really like about that is that it gets really to the heart of a theme that is one I have been tussling with personally over the course of the last 2 years in particular. You know, I actually today Facebook reminded me that it was 2 years ago to the day of recording here that I received by mail the very first copies of my debut novel, Accounting for It All. And I think about what a special moment it was to get that first book in my hands. And I think about that video and the joy that I felt and just how excited I was to lean into this idea of myself as an author. And I think that it was, of course, a great moment of celebration. We talked at the top of this conversation about giving ourselves permission to celebrate and giving ourselves space to do the things that are away from our writing. But at the same time, we can run this risk of taking our writing and our work as authors so seriously that we forget that who we are as a person is not the same as who we are as an author. And if we can get so tied up in, well, all right, this is a very serious thing and I have to do this big serious thing, the weight of the world is upon me. And then in your case, you know, when you reminded yourself, this is not actually the most important thing, you saw this shift. And I have to say, since letting go of the empathy series with that third book a little bit and giving myself permission to sort of just let my shoulders fall and write how it feels like I as a person should be writing and not I as like an author should be writing. Well, that's the kind of stuff, Dan, I know you've seen the first couple chapters of it now. That's the kind of stuff that you see in a manuscript like Scambait. And it feels way more natural for me. I know that some folks have had challenging moments with the style, but it feels really natural and it's really fun. And it's because I'm not taking it so seriously. I'm not sitting there going, look at me clacking away at the keys. It's very important that I, you know, use up every available second I have to get this writing done. So I think that rediscovering that joy and giving yourself permission to know that the writing isn't the thing, it is a thing, can really, I don't know, help us as writers and as people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it is really tricky to keep that perspective. You know, I do find myself sometimes backsliding, and being like, oh my God, what am I going to do about this work project? Or I've got to get this chapter done, or I'm not going to feel good about myself. And you really have to reframe it again and say, hang on a second, man. Remember how effective that guy was when he didn't, how effective you were when you didn't care, you just let it go. Yep. It's like, okay, do that again.
It's just the idea of writing with abandon. I think that that's a really big part of it. And I think that maybe sometimes when we give ourselves permission to do that, well, we might revisit that text later and say, okay, I do need to give this some semblance of shape, or we use our editor brain and we help steer it in a more clear direction. But in that true first draft space, you know, giving yourself permission to play. And I'm not talking about being in a sandbox. I'm talking about building the sandbox, you know, being there for even that stage of it, if you can, truly being present in the moment is so rewarding because it gives you that sort of ability to step back and appreciate not just the final product, but to appreciate the process. And because we spend so much more time in process than we do in product, I think that's really important. We don't lose sight of that.
Well, and that does also circle back to kind of writing what you like, what you want to write, you know, writing what you see, right? You know, I've definitely heard it from my mother, like, have you ever thought that maybe you'd like to write something, you know, just like literary fiction, basically, is what she's describing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, Mom, you know, I would if I could, but this is what comes out.
So I'm going to roll with that.
Yeah, I've got to write what you know, what I see. So if I could see something like that, I probably would write that book, but I don't, you know, it's not coming to me.
If you've visited my author website or social media profiles before, you've likely noticed a number of high quality images of my books in quite a few different picturesque settings. And this might have had you wondering, well, who did I pay to take those photos? How much did it cost, and was it possibly worth it? Well, I'm going to let you in on a secret. I did not pay a photographer for those photos, and I was able to create them in minutes and for far less than you might think. How did I make those photos? Well, I used mock-up shots. Mockup Shots is an online software by Adazing that lets you upload your book covers to create high-quality images of your books for marketing and publicity purposes. Using Mockup Shots has helped me further develop my brand and sharpened my web presence, whether that be on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or my author site. Not only that, but Mockup Shots has saved me tons of time. Whenever I need a stunning new photo of one of my books, I can simply hop into Mockup Shots and generate one in minutes. So if this sounds awesome, well, I can assure you it is. And right now, you can get a deal available to our RightsCast Network listeners by visiting bit.ly/coverphotosdeal to check out Mockup Shots, get a couple of sample images of your own, and hey, see if the software is right for you. Again, the place to visit is bit.ly/coverphotosdeal. You know, that's interesting too, because there's always those folks in our lives who they want to contribute and be part of it, and they throw ideas your way and they ask questions like that. And it just always makes me think of my mother-in-law, who anytime, you know, in non-COVID times that we'd go up to central Wisconsin to visit them, there's always this moment where she kind of looks at me after a particularly interesting bit of banter across families and whoever's in the house, she'll go, "Oh, I can't wait for you to write this into a novel someday." And I always think to myself, you know, I can't. I literally cannot write it into a novel, because if I did, I would be told that it was unbelievable and be laughed out of the room. It's just that life is stranger than fiction sometimes, and we just have to let life be life and fiction be fiction to some extent.
Absolutely. You know, it reminds me of, you know, way back in the day in the writing group, we had a member who was writing a historical fiction about World Wars One and World Wars Two and the communist era of Serbia. And at one point, the characters go to France, and she's got guys in black and white striped T-shirts with a beret on, riding a bike with a baguette, you know, in the bag, in the basket of the bike, riding down the street. And I was like, you know, that feels kind of like a little cliche France to me, you know? And she was like, well, that's what it was like when I was there, you know, shortly after this time period, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, it might be what it was like, but that has since become, you know, this is cliche. You can't do that anymore, even if it's the true thing.
Yep. Sometimes it is the case that you have to give yourself that little bit of distance from, it's interesting to say that sometimes you have to give yourself distance from the truth to find it again, because I think that maybe that's the thread, not only in terms of like imagery, but in terms of theme. Because I think about, here's another example we can bring in, which we'll see how it lands here. But I think about writing the manuscript I'm working on mostly right now, which is To Have Been Rich. And I originally started this as an exploration of self, and if I had made several different decisions at critical points in my life that were not as wise of decisions as maybe I made. I'm not saying I always made the wisest choice, but I'm saying if I had, you know, knocked it down a couple pegs and made a few less wise decisions. And what happened is, as I was writing that first draft, is I found that there were pockets where I was really embracing the truth of the events as I recall them to such an extent that it was forcing the novel down paths that didn't feel right insofar as actual narrative storytelling was concerned. And so what I've had to do in this second draft is say, okay, I'm going to give myself a little space between reality by now knowing who my characters are more and what it is that they would be interested in and the choices that they might make. And in the second draft, I give myself distance from what was a truth to get at a different sort of truth that's still going to land me in the same neighborhood thematically. So it's, again, we're talking about things that have come up in this conversation already. Recognizing your process, really embracing it, giving yourself permission to separate who you are as a person from who you are as an author. And I think that, you know, one thing that comes up often from Barry Whiteman, who is the president of the Wisconsin Writers Association, one of the things that I hear him say after someone has read their work aloud, mostly on Zoom these days, is, you know, he'll say something about how that story, you know, beauty and truth, it gets it both. And that's what good writing is about. And I think if we can keep maybe those things in mind, the beauty of life and truth and the relationship that maybe we have to it and the relationship our fiction has to it, we're landing ourselves in a hopefully healthy place and also a happy place. And that was a long rant from me there, I know, but that's just, it's really flowing right now, I guess.
Well, you know, beauty and truth, that's one way to put it. I think another way to look at it is, you know, stories are life with the boring parts taken out.
Yeah, that's true.
Or maybe a third way to look at it is stories are life, except they make sense.
Yeah, right. Definitely. Yes.
You know, because we don't have this amazing arc in life, right? You go through life, you have your ups and downs, but it's not this cohesive narrative that ultimately makes sense. At least in my opinion, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very true. And I think that maybe that is the tendency that folks who are, I can't imagine, you know, I'm not someone who has written memoir. I don't necessarily see myself ever operating in the memoir space, but I know that that is something folks who write in that space are often coached on, is you have to get comfortable sometimes separating out the sort of the boring parts. Like, they felt important to you and they were important for your journey, but from the perspective of a reader, do they need to know this to understand what your statement is in writing that memoir? So when we are bringing our life, you know, into, even if it's into a nonfiction space, there's still this sort of editorializing that happens because there's a difference in expectation between engaging with media and engaging with the real world around us. And I think that that's, it's an inevitability of what we do. It's just kind of part of the process.
Oh, and, you know, from my perspective, I think writing a memoir sounds like pure torture. Yeah. That would be the hardest thing in the world for me to write. That would be, oh my gosh, I would rather mine coal than write a memoir.
Rather subject yourself to the black lung than to put black ink on paper.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. I'll go underground with the pickaxe and mine the coal rather than write a memoir. You know, I don't know. I would not want to write that much about myself. Although, you know, you do have to say through your fiction, aren't you writing about yourself? Are you or aren't you writing about yourself in some way, shape, or form? You know, as Freud would say, you know, we're everyone in our dreams, right?
Yeah.
So it does follow to some degree that we are everyone in our novels.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, as I look at the time here in our interview, I'm thinking about some of the topics that have come up recurringly here. And one thing that we've discussed is this idea of, you know, making sure that you enjoy your work and knowing when it's okay to let go of a particular project. You know, for you, it was the post-apocalyptic project. It's still out there, but you've set it aside. We're discussing this, of course, in the context of the RightsCast Network. This is it here. You know, we're in the closing minutes of the RightsCast Network. We're talking about it in the context of the Empathy series being set aside as well. And I know, Dan, one other thing that you set aside earlier on in your writing career was actually the fact that you did have an agent at one point, mm-hmm. and you chose to part ways with them. And I know that for most listeners, that might be a little unusual of a thing to hear. And so as we kind of slide out with the RightsCast Network, I'd like to kind of talk about the process, what that was like for you to find that agent, to have that agent, then ultimately recognizing that it was time to, you know, cut the cord on that. And then I'm going to try and turn it into a big metaphor for the RightsCast Network at the end here. So,
okay. Please,
all right. So what was it? What was all that like for you?
Well, you know, I mean, first of all, if it sounds surprising to anybody that I parted ways with my agent, then they've probably got a much better agent than I had. So for starters, but I met my agent at Wisconsin Writers Institute, pitched my story to him there, and, you know, got back a response. He said he wanted to see a whole manuscript. He liked it. He thought that, you know, from a science fiction standpoint, and I do think he was right about this, that it should be a series, right? Because people want to buy sci-fi series. And I was like, okay, that's great. And I started, you know, chopping up the first book and being like, okay, so what's the new first book look like? And I wrote that and sent it off to them. And while they were, you know, editing that and going over that, I was working on the second book, but there was still no launch in sight, no completion of the first book in sight, you know, after like 3 years. And I was just like, you know what? This is wrong here. I'm somebody who writes a ton. I produce a ton of pages. And that's what an agent should want. He should want a client who wants to write and wants to get books out as fast as possible. And you know, I just didn't feel like the investment was there on that side of the game. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I said, why would I continue forward with this? And I also, you know, I did abandon that science fiction series as well when I parted way with my agent, because I was already working on Rogue Destiny. And I was like, you know what? Rogue Destiny is a much better book. It's a much better story. And this is the space that I really want to play in, this galactic kind of stage, right? With lots of different alien races and alien planets and, you know, kind of sky's the limit imagination. So, that was the decision there, just because I didn't feel like the wheels were moving on that side enough. And I did pitch, you know, Rogue Destiny to a variety of agents. I got some requests for more. I got some requests for full manuscripts. Ultimately, though, no agents wanted to take it on. I think that, you know, in part was because of the size of Rogue Destiny. I mean, that's an 800 page book. I can't remember what the word count ended up at, but it's a very long book. And it's a lot to bite off for a new reader, right? At least I think that was their perspective. I've tried to learn from that, you know, going forward in the Alpha Omega series. This is still the space I want to play in, you know, with some changes, you know, to make it more, I don't know, less frontier and more big city, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But also to try to keep the books to like around 90 to 95,000 words. I just think that's a little bit more of a digestible chunk for a reader. And it, you know, allows me to kind of do more with the series. You know, I've got a lot of ideas for it, but we don't have to cram it all into one bag.
I think that there's quite a few things that are really standing out to me in all of that, you know, and it comes down to, we'll put it in terms of 1, 2, and 3, you know, keep it simple here, but it's this idea that, you know, you weren't feeling from your agent that the investment was there. Perhaps there was, you just weren't in sync on all of that. You kind of knowing then, this is point two, the space that you wanted to be in. And then three, being deliberate about that space that you want to be in and knowing where your strengths are at and what it is that you want to do going forward. And I think to sort of tie that into the RightsCast network here, that's kind of in some way what my process was as well. It's an investment to do anything in this world when you're thinking about it in terms of time. You know, it's an investment when we sit down and we write. It's an investment to have a relationship with an agent. It's an investment to have relationships with the people in our life. And if we reach a point where, hey, I don't know if this is an investment I'm in a position to make because it's taking away from my ability to do other things. You know, in my case, it was, I'm spending a lot of time podcasting and promoting and finding guests and looking for sponsors. Well, where's the time to write and to be a happy person kind of thing? And that I personally just wanted to focus more on writing. You know, that's the space I wanted to be in. And so the only way to make all of that line up is to be deliberate, our third point there, and say, you know what? I have to say no to some things. You know, for you, it was saying no to an agent. For me, it's saying no to this podcast and this network so that I can be deliberate about what it is I really want to do. And you have gone on to have some really great success here in the self-publishing space. You seem very happy with what it is you have, you know, out there. You continue to write. You're finding joy in that. And I'm looking forward to doing something similar here as I focus on my own writing. But just that idea of being deliberate and knowing where the investments are to be made and, you know, the space that you want to play in, I think those are our three lessons right there that we can take as we wind this conversation down.
Well, absolutely. You know, and I would just add to that too, that, you know, you've created a resource here that I think should be fairly evergreen, right? In these 100 episodes, there's people can, you know, start them from the beginning, you know, pick and choose what they want to learn about, you know, that'll always be there. And just because you're, you know, closing the doors on this podcast, I don't think it means that you're kicked out of the International League of Podcasters forever or anything like that, right? You know, I mean, certainly the podcasting Illuminati will let you back in if you want to do a new podcast. Maybe it's this again, years down the road. Maybe there's more to say, or maybe it's a different kind of podcast altogether. But you certainly have the skills for it. You have the, you know, equipment for it. You have the experience for it now. So if you ever do decide that it's time to get back on the air, so to speak, it should be easy enough to do.
Yeah. And, you know, first and foremost, the podcast Illuminati. Dan, we don't talk about the podcast Illuminati. What are you doing? Now everyone knows. No, but yeah.
Hang on a second. I got some guys in black suits showing up at my house right now.
Yeah.
They look unhappy with me.
We're going to have to go back and put a hard edit break in there, just like censor it out and just like an abrupt end of the conversation. But you are correct, you know, in the same way that the books that we write, once we put them out there, they're available there. And like you've tried to do with Rogue Destiny, with your Alpha Omega series, is making sure that you're writing them in such a way that they can be more evergreen, right? You don't want the technology to become dated or anything like that. It's kind of what we had here with the podcast. Like you say, you know, we have 100 episodes of this interview program. We ended up with 30 episodes of novel approaches, I believe 7 episodes of Biblio Breakdown, and a handful of one-offs that were thrown in there as well. And I think that knowing, listeners, that that stuff's going to be available to you to listen to here for so long as I'm, you know, willing and able to pay for hosting fees kind of thing. That's great. You know, it's really good to know that that's something that can be out there. We can be proud of it. And I want listeners to know too, that like, I include you in that we. Dan, I include you and the other guests that we have had on these shows as part of that we, because it's been me on one side of the microphone for nearly every episode that we've had on this network. But none of this happens, you know, in the same way that we get our books out there. None of it happens without the other people in our lives to support us. I know Dan, Michelle is a big supporter of you and your work. You have 2 daughters who I'm sure once they're at a point where they're, you know, able to read, will want to read dad's books at some point as well. And that's just the incredible thing about this is, writing is such a lonely endeavor, and it can be a lonely endeavor, but we don't do any of it truly alone. And so I want folks to take that with them going forward here and know that, hey, I'm grateful, folks, that you tuned in over the course of the last 4 years. And I'm really grateful for, you know, whatever it is that comes next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me on, Ryan. I feel like, you know, it's an interesting retrospective to do this now, right? In the wake of our November elections here, considering that we did the first episode just after the election 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And we did have a chat about how, you know, a good villain always thinks that he's the hero of the story. And, you know, we've seen that play out in terrifying fashion over the last 4 years in America. But man, what a strange trip it's been.
It's been a strange trip for sure. And I think, Dan, that folks like you and I and those who have tuned into this podcast, I'm pretty confident that we're going to be able to go forward and know that we are, in fact, the heroes of our own story, and not hopefully in a villainous way, but that, you know, every hero has to start their journey somewhere, whether that's with podcasting, whether that's with getting down the first words of a manuscript. And, you know, heroes, go out there and make those words happen. Well, you got it in you. I know that you do. So thanks again, Dan, for joining me for the first episode of the RightsCast Network, the R.R. Campbell RightsCast, and now here for its very final episode. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, man. This was really fun.
That's a wrap. Thanks to Dan Skiro for joining me for this episode, and thanks to you, dear listeners, for tuning into this conversation and so many others over the years. I have to, of course, thank the RightsCast Network's patrons, people like Laura Hazen, Angeline Boley, who have been big-time financial supporters of our programming at patreon.com/rightscast for years now. Really, really just incredible. Thank you so much. And thank you as well, of course, to sponsors. That's Dandelion Web Marketing. That's Clear Darling's Candle Company. Other folks who have come and gone. Chicago Writers Association, Wisconsin Writers Association. We're talking about Lost Lake Press. I appreciate everything that you have done to help grow this network and to, you know, really bring this community the kind of content that they have been looking for. So thanks to those sponsors as well. And I got to thank, of course, our audio folks, audio support. That's Electronauts Inc. If you want to learn more about them and their audio production and maintenance services, check out electronautsinc.com. That's electronautsinc.com. And then coming up next on the RightsCast Network is, well, nothing. But that doesn't mean I'm going away. Like I mentioned when I first made the announcement about the RightsCast Network coming to a close, I told you to stay in touch. I meant it then. I mean it now. So to stay in touch with me, I want you to reach out via my author site at rrcampbellwrites.com, or just shoot me an email directly at rrcampbellwrites@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook as @IamRRCampbell. Thanks again for listening and for being part of this community. Now, please, if you would, say it with me one last time. This is RR Campbell signing off. Right on, and right well.
This is the RightsCast Network, brought to you by Dandelion Web Marketing and Kill Your Darlings Candle Company, and always streaming at RightsCast.net.